This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello, 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 hello.
Your signal's gone to shit, David.
Hello.
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 Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com, and your host joining me for the latest edition, Mr. Chris Budd and Mr. Phil Shaw. Welcome.
Hello, sir. How are you doing?
Hello.
Not too bad. A bit of a... Strange one, because
weird, isn't it? Bit of a first for all of us this week.
Mm-hmm.
The monarch that has been has been reigning since all of us were born here. I don't think there'll be many listeners actually who knew a monarch before Queen Elizabeth II. But the knock-on effect of her passing, I'm sure you've already heard enough on her via the media, but one of the knock-on effects is the postponing of Aston Villa's game against Leicester, which we would have normally been talking about on this episode. We're recording this a little earlier, so we're not actually we don't actually know if the Southampton game is on 100%. So the Leicester game, or El Sacchio, as people were calling it, has probably been pushed into the new year.
Could well be, yeah. It's probably saved Steven Gerrard's job for a few more days.
Well, I don't know. I think he might have wanted it now, because Leicester may have regrouped by the time we play them in 2023.
Because they've been pretty awful, haven't they?
It might have been a real chance of 3 points there. We shall see.
Especially with the state of their goalkeeper trying to replace Kasper Schmeichel. Jesus Christ, he was awful at was it Brighton, wasn't it, the last two previously?
Yeah, I mean, they may even have a transfer window before we play them now, so...
Their manager could even be managing Villa. Who knows?
Now, Phil, settle down. Settle down.
Such is the state of flux in Britain at the moment. New head of state, new prime minister, new everything else.
Anyway, coming up in the show, we'll do the usual Villa news, 3 points, media muppets before a more kind of general chat. We didn't do something for the weekend, obviously, because there was no Leicester game, but we didn't want to leave you hanging entirely. I was going to say, what news should we talk about? I think we'll just go straight to the Villa news.
Probably best.
Yeah.
Well, there isn't that much of it, actually. Not a lot's actually happened. This is going to be a great show, this one. First of all, obviously, what we've just mentioned, Aston Villa's away game at Leicester has been postponed at this stage of the podcast. Probably you are more wiser when you listen to it. Southampton is a TBC. Meanwhile, if the passing of Queen Elizabeth II was a chance to reflect on one's life, then... Maybe people should reflect on spending every day on Twitter, because the latest uproar on Twitter is Frederick Gilbert referencing not having his picture on the website in the team lineup. Somebody, I think it was the Birmingham Mail, referred to the fact, and he retweeted that and said, "Cherry on the cake."
Between him and Trevor Sinclair, it's not been a good couple of days on Twitter, has it?
Morgan Sanson is in the picture, though, so maybe he does have a future. I was expecting those guys, at least one of them, to ship off to Turkey, but the Turkish Super League has no place for these Villa French misfits. What do they used to call the... not the Resistance. What's the other group in the...
Foreign Legion?
Yeah, the Foreign Legion. Oh, dear. I mean, Gilbert, I thought there was a role for him as a backup right back until I saw our new starting right back, Ashley Young, against Manchester City.
Talk about an upgrade.
About an upgrade. So now Matty Cash, who is the backup right back.
So Benjamin Button.
Philippe Coutinho is not in the Brazilian squad. The first time in 11 months that he's dropped out of that. I think rightly so, because he's been playing within himself 100%, really.
Yeah. Well, highly ineffective, if you're being polite. Brazil have got a wealth of talent.
We'll talk more about him later on, actually. There's something kind of interesting that's come out of that Manchester City game, which we'll address. Meanwhile, the Aston Villa women's team has signed on a season-long loan from Manchester United, Kirsty Hansen. Right, let's get on to Media Muppets. Right, what's in the Media Muppet trough this week, Mr. Shaw?
Well, I would like to say it's long-time target Piers Morgan, but unfortunately he's not the Muppet. He is the victim of some very artistic licensing from the Battery Hens of the Birmingham Mail. The headline they came out with was, Piers Morgan calls for Premier League fixture U-turn after Aston Villa and Wolves decision. So the problem with this is he just hasn't. It's completely false. The headline is just a lie, because the logistics involved, even Piers would know the logistics involved in performing a U-turn on those fixtures after you had announced they had been cancelled, it just wouldn't make it possible.
Yeah.
I mean, whether the decision was correct or incorrect, which we might talk about later, once you make the decision, that's it, it's done. What Piers Morgan actually tweeted was, sporting events should go ahead. The Queen loves sport and it would be great to see, hear huge crowds singing the national anthem in tribute, as West Ham's did so magnificently last night. Then an hour later, after the decision was made, he just...
Just a clarification, his initial tweet was before the decision.
Yeah.
And then he just retweeted it, didn't it, saying ridiculous decision.
Yeah. So, I mean, he hasn't called for a U-turn at all, because calling for a U-turn is a ridiculous thing to come out with, because once you're past the point of no return, once the decision's been made. So, unfortunately, it's not Piers in the
beginning. This is just using somebody's name for clout to get a headline, basically. It's sad. What gets churned out as news nowadays, it's soul destroying, to put it bluntly.
Wait, shit.
Yeah.
To put it blunter.
This is like the Muppet Show, and Chris Budd is sitting up in the box like those two old men.
He's just going, his hands.
Just occasionally, just interrupting, going, it's shit. I think that's the second time you've done it so far.
Yeah, it's just that this one's a bit of a collector's item. It's not often that the headline's just blatantly wrong. Just like it's completely wrong.
It's not often that the headline's blatantly wrong. It's pretty much 70% of the time, isn't it?
70 times a day.
Yeah.
They usually try and get a bit of ambiguity out of it, but this is just factually incorrect.
Yeah, I don't know. The world's burning in front of our eyes. The last thing holding it all together has now departed, so good luck for the rest of our lives, I think. We're going to need it. Right, let's get into the 3 points. Number one, Chelsea have actually broken, it's the record, isn't it? World record transfer fee for a manager. Now, who would have thought, Phil Shaw, that it would be Graham Potter?
Unbelievable, isn't it?
This is fantastic.
On offer.
From Brighton, that mecca of football science. 20 million plus 2 million for his backroom staff. That's a gamble, isn't it?
I think so.
It is a gamble, but I think it's brilliant, because Graham Potter, you know, I'm not a biggest fan of his style of football, but he is very popular with what you'd call the football hipster writer crowd. So every time a manager's job comes up, they go, oh, they should seriously be looking at Graham Potter. Why do they not consider Graham Potter for this? Well, Chelsea have just slopped the money down the table. Right, Potter's in. Let's see how he does now. And you just see like all these football writers like, right, back him or sack him time. It's like, is he going to be the success? I mean, if Potter isn't a success, I don't think it really will be down to him, because I'm sure he will get a tune out of Chelsea, but they don't give like the best managers in the world.
No disrespect to Potter, but do you think we've got to the stage where, I think it was the last process of Premier League management was like top, top managers, European managers that started to, once tried the top four, top six, and been sacked. They were kind of redundant for those clubs. So then, you know, the likes of Angelotti, Ranieri, Benitez were suddenly finding themselves at the likes of Watford, Newcastle, Everton. And now that seems to have failed. We're now in like some wilderness that Premier League football doesn't know what to do, because there was that recycling before of the likes of Allardyce, Bruce, Pardew,
Pulis, etc. Yeah.
Pulis, that was all like kick to touch. All the clubs that would actually drop to that level basically had those managers, and now we're in a whole new dawn. This is why it's kind of in Villa's interest to keep Gerrard. As long as there's a sign, it might work. Because the alternative, there's nothing out there.
No, there's no bankers. I mean, there's some potentially box office names, but they're not like guys who've won you trophies. There's not, you know, there's not a lot of... This is the problem when football...
Pochettino, surely he would have been Chelsea, because he was the only one on the merry-go-round really available.
But he's got the Spurs connection, and he's a bit of a weird
one.
That
doesn't really stop people
You wouldn't have thought so, but I think what you're seeing as well is, certainly I can only speak for English football, you're seeing the downside of when the league becomes such a fucking monopoly over a long period. So you've got like Pep at City, you know, Klopp at Liverpool, but there's not like the next manager and their team coming through and pushing them.
Well, the next Klopp, they just sacked him.
Yeah, I mean, I really like Tuchel. I think it's a bizarre decision. I really
do. Especially after giving them £250 million to spend.
Yeah, and then you've just spent it. And then you go, right, cheers for spending that. Now we're off. Unless it's money that actually, it hasn't really been his spend. And they've just gone and bought the players they want. And they've said, go and coach him. And he's gone. Because there was rumour, wasn't there, about them suggesting the, system and the tactics and stuff.
Yeah, where did that come from?
I'm not quite sure. I mean, you can kind of imagine it with the new hedge fund manager owner and stuff that, wants it done his way.
Because all of this has really just inflated the stock of people that really, you shouldn't be paying 20 million compensation for Potter. That just, it gives that illusion that he's, 100%. It gives some illusion that he's some kind of tactical mastermind, which, I mean, you know, what's he done? He's got Brighton to ninth, that's about it.
Yeah, well, he beat a poor Man United team in their first game, and then he beat Leicester, who are on the floor in the last game in between.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a good timing for Potter, because in the month of October, Brighton have got to play Manchester City, Liverpool, Spurs, and I think Arsenal as well. They've got like four of the top six. So that, you know, certainly they would be mid-table and nobody would be bowing down at the throne of Potter. So it's a perfect storm for him. Brighton, although, you know, when it comes to, and we don't want to linger on this point, but then again, we haven't got much else to talk about. what is the value of a manager to a player? Because, I mean, the comparison here, 20 million, what's that gets you a Wesley, doesn't it, in terms of Villa? Yeah. Now, I would rather invest 20 million into a good manager than any player, really.
And, of course, it comes with the backroom team and, you know, it's the people that guide the ship, mould it, do all the development stuff. I think some of the slightly more, should we say, underutilized or undervalued guys in the modern game are probably your analysts, which, you know, within a new American owner, they love the whole money ball thing, don't they? So if they've got a manager who's up on that and they've got a good analytics team behind them, they'll go straight for that.
They've also asked him to help select the sporting director, haven't they?
Which is a strange decision. Surely the sporting director would come in first.
I think they probably have one eye on what Howe did at Newcastle and thinking, oh, actually, that kind of level of manager, the up-and-coming, you know, kind of English.
Almost like who would you want as your mentor or something?
Well, no, not necessarily, you know, whoever's potentially good who they can work with. But, I mean, they've looked at Howe and say, well, actually, this can work. And let's build around this and let's maybe go for something a bit more long-term. But it's all well and good, that intention. But will their nerve hold? Because it doesn't seem in the Premier League that any owners or, you know, boards' nerve does hold to see a project through. I mean, that's why Villa are, you know, they're not going to sack Gerrard just like that, or else that's just kind of reckless, because you're never going to get anywhere. There's got to be some adversity for something to work most of the time. You don't just get a manager in and it's like hunky-dory from day dot. There's always a bit of a downturn while they kind of sort things out.
Yeah, I mean, look at the always sort of extreme example of that, of course, was Ferguson at United. Admittedly, the game's changed a bit, but it took him a long time to get it, to build that juggernaut. And also, you think about United on and off the pitch, really. It wasn't until they started really winning Premier Leagues that they became that commercial giant.
Well, they've always been fan base wise. Like, them in Liverpool have always been the biggest. Like,
but in terms of like
institutions,
global,
it's always been like that. It's
but I think
in my day as a kid, you know, Premier Manchester, League. You know, Liverpool always the biggest.
I think they were the biggest, but in terms of what they became, that real like global juggernaut, I think they flew ahead of the other teams in the Premier League first.
Well, that's just like ridiculous success just fed into that. But initially they were like, you know, them and Liverpool were, that's why there was this clamour. What is, you know, why can't Manchester United win the league? But at the same time, you said the game was different then. I think it's still, I think the principle's the same. It's the only thing harder now is there's more well-developed teams, because back in those days, it was literally Liverpool and that was it. And, who came second swapped around a little bit more than it would nowadays.
With occasional teams, you know, you'd have like a Villa come in second, or you'd have Blackburn winning it 1 year.
Watford, Norwich, all those guys.
Yeah, but when Newcastle were in the mix, and then...
Yeah, the Potter thing, it just is like, will he handle the egos of that Chelsea squad that have been assembled for... Yeah, I mean, because your Thiago Silvas, your players like that... More experience. Yeah, more experience in the game than Potter himself. I mean, if he can crack that, then probably the sky is the limit for him, but that's where I think it could fall down.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, that's, I mean, that's the thing you thought with Gerrard, is you're not going to get that because, you know, his
ego's bigger than all of them.
his aura is bigger than all of them. It's a bit of a complete contrast, isn't it? It's not necessarily works, though. I mean, it's like the Mourinho effect, where you have somebody who never made it as a player, and, you know, a lot of good managers start that way due to an injury as a player or whatever. So they get into it at the start. You know, they would be seen by pros as the failed player. So there's got to be that switch where they do get respected, and it's always about results, isn't it? Yep. So I think
results and probably process as well. You know, I think some players go, actually, you know, I really buy into this guy, because obviously they get a different stance, don't they, to the pundits and the fans, because they get that day to day sort of working relationship. And some players go, actually, I really like working under this guy.
I mean, I'd be interested to see how much flexibility there would be in a transitional season that Potter has to have this season.
As well as that, I mean, the scouts that he's bringing, or the analysts that he's bringing, they're used to uncovering small value players to replace the players that they sell on.
Sort of maximizing.
Suddenly, is it like you've been used to working within constraints, and then they've no constraints, and all of a sudden they go and buy silly players, Mr. Lang, and it just doesn't work out.
Well, they're certainly shopping in a different pool, aren't they now?
Yeah. Anyway, let's go to point number two. Point number two, in terms of Queen Elizabeth's the second passing, when you look at... the English top flight wins per monarch, a stat that's been going around at Twitter. Most wins for an English team since Queen Elizabeth is Manchester United. We haven't run the numbers on this. We are assuming this tweet is correct in its substance. Always dangerous.
Yes.
George VI before that, Wolverhampton Wanderers. This one's a bit bizarre. Edward VIII... Brentford.
What, did he have like one weekend or something?
They had their good sort of run before he abdicated.
Did they?
Ah, interesting.
George V, Sunderland were the team. Edward VII, it was Newcastle United. And then Queen Victoria, Aston Villa. The Victorian age.
Not that we live in the past or anything.
not that we cling on to the past in any shape or form.
Hurrah!
Well, I'm thinking the way this is going, you've got the old King Charles III reign, which is going to be ultimately a transitional period. 10 to 20 years, would you give him? I mean, they do have good health care.
Potentially, 20 years.
So that, I think we can get our shit in order in those, let's say, two decades. And then the William reign is where we are. We'll be number one again.
And then it's going to get lively, isn't it?
That will be
North
where
Stand
we...
might be finished by then.
That's when we come back to the top of the tree. So just got to hang in there. I'm going to need to get some good health care from somewhere, because this NHS, I don't think I'll make it. Right, point number three. literally. This is a point about taking the piss, literally, in the FA Cup, where a goalkeeper was sent off for running over to a hedge. And this is when the ball went out for a goal kick. Couldn't hold himself, needed to go to the toilet. So it went to a nearby hedge and took a waz while other players were shouting, "What's he doing?" to the ref. The ref just went up to him, red card, and he was off.
It's a bit harsh.
This was a game between Blackfield and Langley FC and Mallet FC. Is that Timmy Mallet? I've never heard of these clubs. This is at very early rounds of the FA Cup, obviously. I'm a bit worried about Phil Shaw. He's a bit amoral, isn't he? He's having hooters on the front of shirts. He's not sending people off for pissing in hedges during a game. Anything goes in the world of Shaw.
You don't want to be shaking the guy's hand, do you, after the game?
No. Well, you could see Emmy doing that, couldn't you? Just to kill a few more seconds. Goal kick. Oh, hold on, lads.
Just running to the stand.
Take a piss in the Stretford end. Yeah, it'd be great.
I've already done the fake injury. What can I do now?
We've all been there, Emmy.
Before we go on, I just want to give a big shout out to the My Old Man Said members. And thank you very much for supporting the show as always. As a My Old Man Said member, you get access to extra shows, you get ad-free versions, and most of all, you get access to our inner circle, our match club. If you do enjoy the show, please do go to myoldmansaid.com and click on the members link to get more details, and please do consider joining us. Big shout out to Daniel Naprus. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, for joining us as an annual member. If you join us as an annual member, you get a 10% off, which is just over a month's free membership. So go to myoldmansaid.com and click on the members link for more details. Right, we would have been talking about the Leicester game, 3 points, vastly improving our goal difference as well after that Dendonka hat trick.
But a rare clean sheet.
Alas, not. I was looking forward to this. Do you think we're going to lose momentum? We certainly managed to get a glimpse of momentum, and it's taken away from us in typical fashion.
Maybe, but I don't necessarily think having the time to mould this is the worst thing.
Yeah, I think there's so much wrong that the more... we say that, but...
We've been here before, haven't we?
The more time you give Gerrard to coach, the worse it seems to get. That's the payoff here.
Seems to be the bad... sort of,
I prefer
so
Villa
far,
just not thinking about it, just flying in and
play every game. Just play 38 games a season in 38 days.
Players just playing on instinct and remembering the players that they were and why they were bought for, you know, such.
Well, look at Bailey's goal against
transfer
City.
Fees.
Don't think, just hit it and it flew in.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Was Remy Gard's draw against Manchester City? Was it one game before like a break as well? Something's telling me that.
And that one, we got a clean sheet in.
The parallels, we don't like to draw those parallels, it's dangerous. Would you be surprised if it all went to the... I probably wouldn't.
And there it is, that's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van, unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I mean, this is the problem with this postponement. We want to know, are we turning a corner? We're clutching at straws here, but we want to know, are we actually moving away from the peril of where we are in the league and what's happening? Or are we in a terminal fall here? We need the games. So what do you think of this postponement? I'm kind of, you understand it obviously because of the protocol, but it's when the actual protocol says you can play if you want.
Yeah.
And the Premier League, other, you know, cricket and...
rugby, is it rugby league they're playing? And
which are more like the middle class sports, which would probably be more...
aligned with the royalty, you would think.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, if you know, you know what, where we're coming from here. But you know, the boxing, there was a big women's fight, Savannah Marshall and Carissa Shields, that was taken off.
Obviously, there are things like, even like other cultural things, like last night at the proms, stuff like that's gone.
Yeah, I just wondered, were all eyes in the Premier League when they were making the decision, and they've just taken the option that they thought that everybody else would do at the time, and then turns out nobody else took that.
We don't know whether we're playing Southampton, but I think we had a run of fixtures which were, in terms of levels, were pretty similar. Whether, you know, if you were talking originally Leicester, Southampton, Leeds, Forest. So bearing that in mind, and bearing in mind the way Gerrard went against Manchester City, I mean, you'll notice that the three that replaced Grealish in the aggregate, only one started. And if you had Coutinho on top of that, only one started, that was Bailey. Would you necessarily go for a similar dynamic against the likes of Leeds and Forest, for example?
Would do no harm against Leeds, I think.
In terms of shape, I think I would. I think in terms of personnel, probably you'd probably put in a slightly more progressive player further forward. I think the big question mark, as we've said in previous pods now, is where, well, if and where do you fit in your captain? Does he even play?
Yeah, we'll move on to that in a second. That was my next question. But in terms of the forward players, like, you know, the original conversation was Buendia or Coutinho, and now it's like any of them.
Well, and Ramsey's come in and got himself an assist further forward, which is where he is more useful. It might be that he just goes with the same team, you know, the team that sort of finished. You know, obviously, Young's going to come in for Cash. You would imagine. I don't know how long Cash is out for. They haven't sort of said that yet, have they? Hamstring, Phil? You'd expect a few weeks. But other than that, no changes. I wouldn't have thought. He'll reward them for getting the result.
I think he will probably... we say no changes, and I would agree, no changes. But you can't predict. So I think he'll change it. And it'll be if... I personally wouldn't. I would stick with the same as well and keep Ramsey up in that high sort of like left position, just off Watkins, because the amount of territory that Ramsey can quickly cover compared to some of the other players is just, it gets you up there. And Watkins is the same. He's already up there. So it's automatically Villa doing their business in the right end of the pitch rather than losing it in the middle.
Yeah, you get mobility and a bit of tempo, don't you? I mean, saying that, Buendia does give you a little bit more tempo than Coutinho. I think if you get Coutinho on a good day, brilliant. But I think
we
away
spoke
from home,
about one of the issues was Watkins did a sterling job, but there was nobody quite close to him to get that second ball or obviously get the rewards of his endeavours. So what would you suggest in terms of that player to get closer to him? Because surely the ones that we've mentioned would be normally that player.
Yeah.
I think it's just playing in the hole.
Yeah, I think it's if you're having a 4-3-3, it's just allowing those front three to really push on and give them license to go, and maybe giving one of your midfield three at any given time license to go. So you've always got sort of two men behind the ball, of which you would think Kamara is going to be one of them if he plays. Dendonka, if he comes in and plays, which I think he will at some point sooner rather than later, give you balance, and it'll probably be a case of allowing your front three or four players to go and win you the game. But having that slightly more pragmatic approach seemed to work in Gerrard's early stages, and maybe he's going to have to revert back to what actually kind of worked for him very early on. And
yeah, I don't quite buy into this allowing your front three players to win the game. That sounds like the old style where you just put in like all these riches of Coutinho, Ings, Watkins, and it's like, right then, guys, if the ball gets in your half, you do your thing. I think it's more, as we saw against City, it was a team working in unison. And I think that's more of the approach going forward now. Well, it probably has to be.
Yeah, the fullbacks need to sit slightly deeper.
well, a lot deeper. And then, it's almost lazy in the fullbacks that they don't get back when they're so far up the pitch. I mean, it's not fair to say lazy because they probably put in more yards than fullbacks in any other team because Jared has them playing so high. But if they're at least half that distance up, they can get back. I mean, that's where you've seen Bailey became more alive whenever Young was behind him to cover for him.
Yeah, because if they bombed up against Manchester City, would have been cut to ribbons.
Yeah, that's what I mean by pragmatic. I think it's about having the discipline, isn't it, in your shape to kind of pick your moments when to go, as opposed to, right, we're just going to go all out from the word go. And it's a little bit naive, I suppose, to think that any half-decent Premier League team are going to let you play that way.
That was definitely the problem against Palace, you could see, because you had a good start and everything else, but then they were just so easily countered, just fell apart.
Yeah, we discussed this on a members-only podcast in detail, so we won't go too much into it. But the question of McGinn, didn't have the greatest games against City, and obviously you've got now the pressure of Dendonka coming in. Is that a straight swap? I mean, Dendonka will benefit from the postponed game, so that might work in his favour in terms of getting that start, be it above McGinn or whoever.
Well, it's allowed them all just time to not necessarily finalise, I don't think they'll ever finalise it, but certainly decide upon a system that they think they want to play. And, you know, bar sort of Carlos, who's going to be out for a while, he's pretty set on his personnel now, isn't he? Obviously after the transfer window, etc.
Well, I mean, he says horses for courses in terms of formation, so that's fair enough. But I'm just talking about specifically McGinn.
I think he'll drop Louise before he drops McGinn. I'd be very surprised if he doesn't start McGinn. And like you said, it's going to be the road for his own back McGinn at this stage, because I just can't see him dropping his captain. I think he should, just to let everybody sort of reassess, but I don't think he will.
And probably McGinn needs that, not necessarily a hard reset, but he needs the kind of pull him out the firing line, even if it's just for a game. Because, you know, you could bring somebody else in that position and they have an absolute stinker.
Phil's just said he's not going to drop him. So what are you saying?
He should. I think he'll be deliberating over it, because we didn't miss him, did we, against City when he went off? If anything, we took the game to them more.
Well, that's the thing. We blatantly improved.
Well, I mean, look at the Manchester United situation. I mean, there you have Harry Maguire. He's been in he's held them back, you would almost say, by keeping playing him because of him being captain and because of him, the price tag on him. Now, their new manager's just dropped them, so your captain is sitting on the bench, your 80 million captain. I'm not saying McGinn's 80 million, but it's the same sort of scenario. Gerrard maybe needs to do that and just see how it goes. I mean, even if it is only a couple of games.
What, and build McGinn's confidence up, or will it be shattered by, it would be, it's kind of a punch in the gut to be given captain and then dropped after a few games.
But that shows what you're made of. You know, there's far bigger players historically who've have been dropped from their team, come back and, you know, retain their place and said, this is what I'm all about. It might be that, you know, bringing him off the bench in one of these games where you get not necessarily a headless chicken McGinn, but you get all action McGinn for 20 minutes at the end of a game. A little bit like how we've seen, you know, Buendia. If Gerrard's talking about it being a squad game, you know, McGinn almost becomes your club captain, you know, because you're going to have Young on the field, you're going to have Martinez on the field.
I think even more intriguing than McGinn now is the Louise situation, potentially, because we refuse good money for him. And I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but I would say it's unlikely that he would sign a new contract unless he became a part of a successful Villa team that started rampaging up the league.
And if he was kind of a big part of that.
Yeah, and he actually saw a future in that in terms of success, and maybe we go on a cup run. But, you know, these days if a club swoops in and he gets a direct signing on bonus, that will probably sway his judgment, especially if he gets a move to Arsenal or somewhere.
Yeah, if I was going to offer him a contract, it would be your Delph scenario, only with that 25 million as a release clause. It's like, this is what they were going to pay for. They were clearly ready to pay this. We're not going to put a stupid release clause on it. There it is, 25 million. Just sign on. You'll get a small wage bump, but at least it financially secures Villa's position.
Maybe. They're going to have to be sort of quite savvy how they operate now. And you can't imagine Louise, as we've sort of, I've said numerous times, the Brazilian players across Europe, you've seen it so many times, are not the most loyal.
I find it hard to believe. I mean, Delph. So
I don't think he'll sign a deal out of
Delph was
to the
genuinely
club.
Torn, wasn't he? Because, you know, he understood about reputation and being captain. And so he was, you know, wanting to stay, you know, genuinely.
And I think he probably tried to do the right thing. It just was a bit of a PR own goal.
Yeah, it's just the way the club presented it that it backfired. So I don't think that's in Douglas Luiz's DNA from everything I've heard.
No, but it's not in his DNA. But if he gets a wage bump for the remaining time he's at Villa, it could be enough to sway him. Because you're just looking to not look stupid for not taking the 25 million.
So what happens if somebody comes in January and offers 10?
Get him to sign the contract in February. No, you mean if he hasn't signed a contract, get him, you know, now if somebody offers 10? Depends where Villa are in the league.
Yeah, because he's off if he hasn't signed a Villa contract by January.
Yeah, and also it'll depend where we're at in terms of our wider recruitment. That could also depend on who your manager is, I might add. But it might be that Villa they've kind of sort of, you know, come out and said, oh, you know, we were looking for that additional midfielder. If they continue their search and find it and they go, actually, we've got our guy, we'll take what we can for Luiz now and put it towards the new guy.
I think if we're still in the similar position in the league table as we are now, you're talking about a fire sale, Luiz. 5 million? Yeah, take it.
No problem. Yeah.
Two and a half for McGinn. Yep, that's our money back. We'll take that.
But it's going to be interesting to see how Luiz approaches this as well, because he's actually played, you know, I thought he had a pretty good game against City, and he's certainly a much better ball player in there. He looks like a better foil for, you know, a Kamara.
Well, you kind of need it to work.
You do for now.
The more pragmatic formation, the one against Manchester City, you'd
unless
rather
you're going to go down the sort
him...
of the Canberra route, but I don't think they will.
Nah, the ball isn't sticking with that boy. I think he's
your disruptor.
His race is run potentially because Dendonka will get above him every time now.
Especially if you're going to play a midfield like a flat three, you know, Nakamba's the guy you just stick in front of the back four and go, don't cross the halfway line, which I don't see.
His days are over unless there's a one or two injuries, shall we say?
Yeah. If he has his hand forced.
Yeah, I think that.
The interesting thing, actually, I was going to mention was that I was thinking about. So if you're losing these two games, you've got an international break, etc., then you're going to run a relatively short period into a World Cup. Potentially, the impact of Carlos's injury could be less because if you can get him back in a relatively short amount of time, bearing in mind, you know, Konsa had a supposedly really bad injury and came back a lot sooner, it might be that he misses a lot of time, but doesn't actually miss that many games.
Yeah, it depends when they shoehorn the extra games in, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
If they put him to the back end of the season, then Although I don't see him being that pivotal to our season. Actually, I wouldn't be sitting around waiting for him to get back.
I mean, I don't think in reality would he have that run of results in the games he hasn't played so far. Would he have actually made any difference to the outcome? I don't think he would, because I think the problems weren't actually with him.
Yeah, it's not necessarily individuals. It's the whole setup. It's the whole formation.
Yeah, and your defensive unit.
When you're talking about centre back, it's not him on his own. He could be the greatest centre back to ever live. If your teammates aren't covering their runners, etc., then it's a waste of time. It's like, you know, for example, against Haaland, Mings did a sterling job, but obviously he was further forward for the cross, so the cross was over him, and it was up to Konsa to track Haaland, and he didn't. So if that whole unit's not working, then. And, you know, you saw him get done against Everton as well on their goal.
Yeah, and the Bournemouth defensive performance was pretty horrendous.
So I think he still needed games to
settle in.
And would he have formed a unit, a strong unit, is more of the question of rather, you know, just blindsiding yourself to the fact, oh, 26 million, he was definitely an upgrade and he must be better. And not necessarily so.
Agreed. I mean, I think we would have been probably making more judgment on him after the World Cup period and in the new year. So we'll have to.
So we can't. Yeah, we can't really use him as an excuse at this stage. I think Bednarak is as probably as good cover as we could have got with the circumstances in the respect of not wasting money. It's a loan and also of a decent level and a good. I'm getting bored of this physical profile reference now, but in terms of some big juggernaut in there, kind of spot on, because that was something we kind of needed just to, because Chambers is a bit more of a ball player, you know, bit more fey, and Cons is kind of in the middle. So an out and out kind of traditional centre back's probably a good choice.
Yeah,
certainly when you're getting better again, if David Moyes wanted him at West Ham, and you know the kind of centre-backs that Moyes has at West Ham, big, physical threat, aerial threat, you know, it's a good sort of...
Defenders, yes.
Yeah, it's a good reference.
Yeah, and I think West Ham were in for both of those players, if reports are to believe. So when you consider that their first look is to be solid, then...
I mean, Dendonka, Rice and Suchek could be a very sort of big profile midfield, wouldn't it? Just in terms of height and physicality.
You have to go through the legs. So we will see how this plays out. I just wanted games. It's a bit unfortunate, obviously, overall the circumstances. But in terms of when you get two signings in, it's the first thing you want to see is how they shape up in terms of that first 11. And you want to get your eyeballs on them straight away. But we're patient, I think, enough. But... October, certainly, if nothing else, is when I think Villa season really ignites.
Certainly has to.
Six games. Games that, at this point of time, you would say you could potentially get something from any of those games. I mean, the only against the traditional top four would be Chelsea, and they would be very much in transition at this stage with a new manager. So that would be open season on that one.
And they're a bit of a sitting duck away from home, to be honest, at the moment.
Yeah.
I think going to Stamford Bridge might be a different kettle of fish, but they're certainly defensively there to be got at. If you're brave, I think that's one of those games that you can sort of set up as you did against City, but be a little bit more expansive.
I think bottom line is we will pretty much learn what's going to happen to Villa this season. I think you'll know the fate of your manager in those six games.
Yeah,
you'll know if we're any good. You'll know if Gerrard is going to be a bit more pragmatic and reining all these superstar signings, for want of a better term, and just drip feed them off the bench. I mean, we've got a supersonic bench, to be to be honest.
I'm just
nice to have match winners. Didn't we say in the previous one? When would you have come away from a game with Man City and you've got what you're bringing Buendia, Coutinho, and Ashley Young off the bench?
Yeah, I'm just wondering if it gets to January and you suddenly have maybe 30 games left before the end of the season, if it gets to something stupid like that, if there's any more sort of delays, World Cup, if there's anything happens that stops games being played and you're suddenly looking at like a real shootout from January to May, like a couple of games a week.
What are you proposing? Sure, there's going to be some kind of apocalypse as well thrown in.
Well, it's probably... I haven't checked the Book of Revelation to see where we're at now in the end of the world, but still, I think we're taking along the list nicely.
No, I think the monarch passing away. That's the last time that happened was 70 years ago. So I don't think Charles is going to kick it during this season anyway. COVID over the winter, that's a potential, I suppose.
Flock of locusts.
I'm just thinking your FA Cup, your League Cup, just everything, it's going to be crammed. The fixture list is going to be crammed. And then
this is why we have a big squad.
It depends.
I think part of the reason that they postponed that round of games with Leicester was the fact that they'd done it before so recently with the COVID situation and found a way to complete a season. So I think that emboldened them to not actually overthink it too much. They just thought, out of respect, that's it. Because they knew, we can make it up. We've gone through worse before. So I think that helped the decision. So I don't think there'll be a problem. As we've just said, we've got in terms of squad now, what we can bring off the bench and in terms of depth per se, I think we're in a good position. I mean, we've done podcast after podcast saying that wouldn't it be nice to have an impact sub? And that shows you where we've come from. Yeah. So in terms of continual improvement, maybe Purslow was just talking about the bench.
Great having a bench, but it's probably better to have a good starting lineup.
It's a 90-minute game. Right, let's get out of here. If you are listening on Spotify and Apple, please do follow the podcast on there to get the notifications for when it pops. With these postponements, the podcast might not come out on the same dates as they normally do, so it's worth following and subscribing or whatever terminology they use. Please follow the podcast on Twitter as well, at My Old Man Said, and follow these guys as well, at PRS Game for Phil Shaw, and at Bud, is it underscore?
It is.
Music. And I'm at Old Man Said. Just take off the my. Right. Until hopefully we play another game sometime soon.
We'll meet again. Don't know when, don't know where.
It's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
David, you've dropped out big time again here. He's proper gone to shit this time as well.
Right, can you hear me now?
Gone.
Can he hear us, Sandy? He's gone.
Can you hear me now?
David, are you there? Do you want to type anything in the message box?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yes, you're back.
This is going to be an absolute cunt to edit, by the way.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.